This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ihiyes Wuhibi in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We saw that better resourced public schools were able to better adjust to facilitating remote learners. There were learners from under-resourced rural and township schools struggled with that.
That's Stacey Jacobs from South African pressure group Equal Education on trends that standardized tests are showing from the COVID-19 lockdown's impact on the country's students. Details coming up also. Kidnapping students have become more frequent and a source of worry in Nigeria. And the U.S. Secretary of State is gravely concerned about the situation in Ethiopia's Tigray region. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. In recent weeks, mass kidnappings for ransom targeting schools in Nigeria have become more frequent and a source of worry. From Abuja, Gift Agariga takes a look at the rising cycle of kidnapping and ethnic tension in Nigeria.
The pace of kidnappings is accelerating in northern Nigeria, a region that also seen a surge in activity by armed groups. The kidnappings are carried out for ransom and have left many rural residents and schools exposed and living in fear. Sheikh Ahmed Gumi is a popular Islamic cleric who has been in contact with the group, accused of kidnapping more than 40 people from a boys' school in Niger State. Gumi said the livelihood of Fulani herdsmen is being destroyed by cattle rustling that has been going on in the country. This, he said, has pushed them into criminality. Since January, Gumi has met with bandits in Kaduna and Zamfara forests in an attempt to broker a peace deal. He called on the Nigerian government to grant amnesty to the armed groups to end the violence.
They are fighting an ethnic war. They are fighting for their existence. And after meeting them, I had their grievances. They are ready to put down their weapons on conditions that after putting down the weapons, they will not be followed by arrest and court cases for the crimes they committed.
Kidnappings are common in Nigeria, used by criminal gangs to raise a ransom. There have been at least 4 mass kidnappings from schools in northern Nigeria since late December. Hundreds of students have been snatched, and at least one boy was killed in an attack on a school last month. Gumi attributed the rising kidnappings in Nigeria to the poor economy. He said that Fulani herdsmen involved in the banditry are victims of circumstance.
It's not only the Fulanis are involved in kidnappings all over, everywhere. It's just because of the downturn of the economy. It's an economic crisis that has changed people's socio-economic status.
Religious leaders have pleaded with the government to end abductions and murder by bandits in northern Nigeria. The spokesperson for the Christian Association of Nigeria, Pastor Adebayo Oladeji, blamed the government for the increase in kidnappings.
The federal government did not handle the security challenges well, as criminals are being handled with kid gloves. Instead, they are busy doing the radicalization and the abuse of criminals.
Security analyst Senator Irebu says Nigeria's security services may be overwhelmed by the situation.
Our internal security architecture seem to have collapsed. And they've been complaining about it that they overstretch, they overwhelm. We don't get to a situation we solve the existing security challenges, and it's frightening.
On Friday last week, a group of gunmen stormed Government Girls Secondary School in Jangabe, Zamfara State, Nigeria, in the early hours of the morning. They kidnapped 317 girls. For VOA News, Gift Agiriga in Abuja.
3 years ago, Boko Haram abducted 110 girls from a school in Dapicha, Nigeria. One, Leah Sharibu, remains in captivity. Her parents remain hopeful she'll be freed, but say the government is doing nothing to ensure her release. Persida Bang reports from Yola, Nigeria.
In February of 2018, Boko Haram fighters abducted 110 girls from their dormitory at the Government Girls Science and Technical College in Dapchi, located in Nigeria's Yobe State. A month later, the government negotiated the release of most of the girls, but one was left behind. That was Leah Sharibu, a Christian girl aged 14 at the time of her capture and the only Christian in the group. One of the girls who was released said Boko Haram held her back because she refused to convert to Islam. Leah's mother, Rebecca Sharibu, says they are still counting on the promises made by the government of President Muhammadu Buhari regarding her release. Out of the 110 girls abducted, it is only my daughter that has not been released, she says. Why did he not adopt the same means he used in gaining the release of the others to free my girl? They negotiate for the release of those kidnapped in Katsina State, says Sharibu. Why wouldn't they negotiate for my daughter's release? Just one girl. Nigeria's schools are increasingly targeted by Boko Haram and criminal groups. Gunmen on February 17 kidnapped 42 people at a boarding school, including 27 students in north-central Niger State. They have yet to be released. In December, gunmen kidnapped more than 300 schoolboys in northwest Katsina State. Boko Haram claimed responsibility for the kidnapping. Officials blamed bandits, and the boys were released in less than a week. Boko Haram became infamous for school kidnappings in 2014 when it took 276 schoolgirls in the town of Chibok in northeast Borno State. More than 100 of the girls are still missing. Security expert Lionel Rollins says the government is caught in a bind when it comes to rescuing Leah Sharibu.
The only way, though, they can do that is by offering money, because we can't go and storm the Sambisa forest and, with a forceful rescue. So you have to give money in return for her, or give up some prisoners in return for Leah. The problem with that, though, is if Leah is released and the government paid for her release, all the parents who have children who were kidnapped by Boko Haram, who are also held and the Sambisa, they would ask, well, what about me?
There were reports in 2019 that Leah delivered a baby boy in captivity, but her father, Nathan Sharibu, says that is not true. He is calling on Buhari to ensure Leah's safe return.
He has promised several times to the family. He promised the nation. He promised the whole world that his administration will do his possible best to see that my daughter return home safely. So I'm pleading to him, being a father, a grandfather, to do his possible best to see my daughter return home safely. Please, I'm begging him.
Buhari, in 2019, said officials will ensure the release of everyone being held by Boko Haram and other armed groups. Boko Haram alone is believed to be holding more than 100 captives, almost all of them Chibok girls the group abducted 7 years ago. Percy Dabang for VOA News, Yola, Nigeria.
Tunisia's main parliamentary bloc in Ahadaha rallied thousands of people Saturday in a demonstration of support for the government. The Islamist-inspired in Ahadaha and liberal Kalb Tunes parties pushed for a reshuffling of the government by Prime Minister Hichem Mechichi in mid-January, introducing 11 new ministers amid a tug-of-war with President Kais Saied, who has strongly criticized the reshuffle that was confirmed by Parliament. In the absence of constitutional court, the political crisis has dragged on for 6 weeks with no solution in sight to ease tensions between the President, Parliament and the government. Mongi Alazawadi, a Tunisian-American political analyst, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
This huge event that took place in the capital, Tunis, comes in the heel of a political crisis. Some call it a constitutional even crisis. Also, it comes at a time where Ennahda is going through its own political issues within its ranks. We have seen the resignation lately of some key leaders. So these are the two major issues that I think the Nahda leadership tried to address with this rally, and that was huge in numbers. The main points that we noticed that most of the colors and the slogans that were raised mostly was the Tunisian flags. You see a sea of red colors, not the typical blue Nahda political party colors. The slogans were raised were in support of the government, in support of the parliament, calling on the finishing the job and installing a Supreme Court, in support and in protection of the constitutional institutions in the country. And so these are various messages that the Nahda sent. All of these are messages are meant to send to opponents of the Nahda, as well as some of its partners within the government. The chief among them is Qais Saied, the president of Tunisia.
The political crisis has dragged on for 6 weeks with no solution in sight to ease tensions between the president, parliament, and the government. What is the way out?
This is a major, major issue that is threatening even the stability, threatening the economy, threatening the government itself. As we know, the latest head of government, Mr. Mishishi, was handpicked by Qais Saied himself. He was a close advisor to him, and then he was appointed as the interior minister in the previous government, and then he was tasked by Qais Saied to form a new government, and he wanted this government to be independent from all the political parties. And I think quickly, Mishishi, as soon as he was selected, he realized that the survival of his government is going to depend on the parliament and not on Qais Saied, the president. That's what the constitution is set out to do, and quickly formed a coalition of blocs. So that angered the president. And as soon as Mishishi tried to create this reshuffle and include appointees from these political parties that are supporting him now, that angered the president even more and refused to accept this reshuffle and did not want them to come in front of him as the protocol of the constitution calls for, so they can do the swear-in ceremonies. And therefore, we are in this gridlock that these ministers cannot start their new positions, and Qais Saied doesn't want to back out, except now that he's calling for Mishishi to step down.
This development led international rating agency Moody's this week to downgrade Tunisia's sovereign debt rating, complicating the country's borrowing power while it has not finalized its 2021 budget. What is your take on that?
This is the bottom line. The economy is not doing well. It actually registered a -8. Basically, the economy of Tunisia has shrunk due to the pandemic and the economic crisis. Now that Tunisia has been downgraded to a very low level, that means it is going to have a hard time going out in the international markets to borrow any money to survive. Also, we received a warning from IMF that it needs to address some of the major reforms within its economy. Chief among them is to reduce the heavy burden in the public sector of several institutions that are losing and bleeding money while they are bloated in terms of employees and staff. And so amid this crisis, the economy cannot go on like this.
That was Mongi Al-Zawadi, a Tunisian-American political analyst, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi, urging his country to ignore conspiracy theories about the coronavirus vaccines. President Nana Akufo-Addo and his wife became the first people in Ghana to receive the coronavirus vaccine today. Before receiving a shot of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine on live TV, according to the French news agency, AFP, the 76-year-old president said it is important he set the example that the vaccine is safe and everybody should feel comfortable taking it. Last week, Ghana became the first country to receive vaccines from COVAX, of which 600,000 doses will be deployed across the country starting this week. Despite the vaccine rollout in Ghana, the president still wants to keep all current restrictions to curb the spread of the virus. In South Africa, citizens, civil society organizations, and political parties have welcomed the government's decision to ease restrictions designed to limit the spread of COVID-19. This comes as infection and death rates decline in the African country most affected by the pandemic. But many are concerned at the slow pace of vaccinations. Darren Taylor has more.
Gatherings of no more than 100 people indoors and 250 people outdoors are now allowed, as are alcohol sales. So South Africans will be socializing much more freely, except during the curfew from midnight to 4 a.m. Political organizations such as chief opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, have welcomed the lifting of most bans. But leader John Steenhuisen says the government should have done this a long time ago to prevent widespread business bankruptcies and job losses.
The big focus now has to be on the vaccination program and on making sure that we get far more concrete numbers and timeframes on that. You know, we'll certainly be looking to ensure that government is able to roll out the vaccination program as quickly as possible and as widely around the country as possible to prevent another scenario of lockdown, which will be just too devastating for too many businesses.
Steenhuisen's concerned that with most of the vaccines that South Africa has procured so far only arriving in the second half of the year, more waves of COVID-19 are inevitable.
Hopefully government will be able to access far more of them and far more quickly. We've got to vaccinate at a much higher level than we're doing at the moment. Many, many other countries are getting through far quicker the program, and we've got a lot of catching up to do.
Many South Africans feel the same, including Economic Freedom Fighters representative Sinawo Tambo.
A president cannot come out boldly and proudly to announce that 67,000 people out of 58 million in the country have been vaccinated thus far and try and posture that as a vaccination campaign. An inadequate and clumsy vaccination campaign that has been characterized by corruption, that has been characterized by failure, and characterized by incompetence.
There's been no evidence of corruption linked to the country's vaccination plan, although many critics have branded the state's attempts to secure jabs as woeful. Freedom Front Plus leader Pieter Groenewald says President Cyril Ramaphosa should bear responsibility for this.
In the beginning of this year, he said that by the end of the year, they planned to inoculate 40 million people in South Africa. I then said that it is not going to materialize, and I can't understand why the government does not allow people and institutions and companies to, on their own and private way, obtain certain vaccines and to vaccinate their people.
He points to the country's wealthy mining companies.
They are willing to buy the vaccines and vaccinate their workers and their families. And I can't understand why the government does not want to allow that.
South Africa's health department says unstructured and separate vaccine programs would be dangerous and confusing. But what's really creating confusion, says the Inkatha Freedom Party's Mkuleko Hlengwa, is the government's failure to share its vaccination plans in simple terms with citizens.
It seems to be a very high-level kind of communication which does not respond to the very real challenges on the ground. I mean, if you borrow the example of the UK where you had black church leaders helping government to engage with constituents because of government inability to communicate effectively, the same applies here in South Africa as well. I mean, you're looking at a country where...
Local scientists say the scaling down of lockdown restrictions will undoubtedly cause a rise in infections in the coming weeks and months, fueling the intensity of an expected third wave of coronavirus. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Botswana, we saw COVID-19 deaths surpass 300 this week, has lifted a ban on alcohol sales and eased curfew restrictions. But President Mokgweetsi Masisi extended the curfew by a month to March 31st. From Habrone, Botswana, Mokandisi Dube has the details.
In a televised address, President Masisi said rising COVID-19 cases mean the curfew will continue until the end of March. Botswana introduced a 9-hour curfew in December, but Masisi announced Friday the hours have been reduced to 6.
The curfew period restricting the movement of people will be extended from the 1st to the 31st of March 2021 and will begin at 2200 hours, 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. daily. Government has decided to lift the suspension of the sale of alcohol with effect from 1st March 2021. Alcohol will only be sold to consumers on weekdays only.
Masisi says in lifting the alcohol ban, the government took into consideration the impact on the economy.
Studies, both scientific and anecdotal, have shown that alcohol consumption impairs judgment, making it difficult for some cases to adhere to the set health protocols. Although necessary at the time, government is nonetheless worried by the effects of the temporary ban on the sale of alcohol on the industry and by extension on the country's economy.
The local industry employs more than 50,000 people. The Botswana Alcohol Industry Association President Masegonyana Madisa welcomes the decision to lift the ban.
As the alcohol industry, we've always maintained a certain position. That is, government should find a more sustainable approach to this problem that we have, which involves curbing the spread of the virus, which we have in Botswana, and at the same time, balancing it with protecting the lives and livelihoods of those in the alcohol industry, including its extensive value chain.
Meanwhile, the country's COVID-19 Task Force Team Vice Chairperson, Musipili Musipili, is concerned with the rising death toll.
The unfortunate report that we'd like to share is the sharp increase in number of COVID-19 fatalities. The last time we reported, we stood at 254, and unfortunately today we report cumulative 300 total number of COVID-19 associated fatalities for Botswana.
The Southern African countries recorded 28,371 COVID-19 cases and 310 deaths. President Masisi has asked the nation to adhere to COVID-19 protocols as the country awaits the arrival of the first batch of vaccine in March. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Haboroni.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the U.S. is gravely concerned by the situation in Ethiopia's Tigray region. Ethiopian federal forces and their allies have been battling troops loyal to the regional administration since November in the Tigray region. Now, Blinken is calling for an international investigation into reports of human rights violations and is urging immediate withdrawal from Tigray by troops from neighboring Eritrea and forces from the Amhara region bordering Tigray. In response to Blinken's withdrawal call, Ethiopia's foreign ministry said the matter should be decided by the Addis Ababa government and not a foreign power. No one knows how many thousands of civilians have been killed in Tigray. Humanitarian officials have warned that a growing number of people might be starving to death in the region. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the interview.